From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. There was a time, and a long time, when McDonald's was hot. A new restaurant opening every day. And now, it's not. But it's still giant and trying to find its way. Last week on Sliding Sales, its CEO, out. McDonald's is so big that its scramble matters to local economies, to the food we eat or don't, to our waistline. This hour on Point, McDonald's trying to find the future. 8 years we have not seen McDonald's advertising in the Super Bowl broadcast. This year we did. Pay with lovin' was their theme until Valentine's Day or so. During certain times of day, some customers will get to pay for their meals with high fives or hugs or selfies instead of cash.
Hi, welcome to McDonald's. How can I help you?
2 hash browns and a small coffee.
You know what? For your payment today, do you have your cell phone with you?
Yeah.
Dial up your mom. Tell her you love her.
Excuse me?
Hey, Mom. Just wanted to let you know that I love you.
Te quiero mucho. How about you just tell me how much it is?
That is how much it is.
Pay with love, and it's all about the love. But it's not all about the love. Their sales have been down, 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 and down for 5 quarters now. Last week, CEO Don Thompson, word out, he's out at the end of this month. He's stepping down. Here he was back in October on CBS's Sunday Morning, explaining away all the criticism that comes McDonald's way.
We have 35,000 restaurants. We're a big target. If you attack McDonald's, you'll get press. And so, you know, just about any and everyone will attack McDonald's for something.
But how do they turn it around? 35,000 restaurants. With us first today from Chicago is Jason Dean, Chicago Bureau Chief for the Wall Street Journal. He covers the food industry and McDonald's for the Journal. Jason, thank you very much for being here.
Hi, Tom. Thanks.
Before we get all nostalgic, it's not as though it was just back in the 60s or 70s or 80s or 90s when McDonald's had a great run. The first decade of this century were pretty tremendous for McDonald's.
That's right. I mean, it was a pretty remarkable performance for any company. Straight through the recession, they continued to grow pretty steadily, both in terms of sales and in profits, performed very well, rolled out new products that were relatively well received.
8 consecutive years of positive same-store sales growth, nearly 50% increase in revenue, more than doubling of profits. In 2011, McDonald's was the top-performing stock in the Dow Jones average for the 1- and 5-year periods. What happened in the last couple of years, Jason?
Well, to start with, I think that in the later years of that remarkable run, there were already some of these problems were starting to develop. You know, as I said, they rolled out new products that were well-received. That also added to the complexity of the menu. And, you know, remember when Don Thompson's appointment was announced in, I think it was March of 2012, our story said it's a great time for McDonald's, not such a great time to become the CEO of McDonald's, because it was clearly, you know, at a high point. And I think he came in with some problems that were already in effect and arguably was too slow to react to them. That includes just the fundamental shift that's happening in many consumers' mindsets toward big food companies in general, McDonald's in particular, about things like health, animal welfare, antibiotic use in meat, and a general image problem, as well as the difficulties that come with just being so large, as you mentioned.
Talk about big supersize. Well, it was a McDonald's thing. Here's an ad from the 80s. There's a ventriloquist, Wiley Tyler, and his puppet, Lester, and he's giving larger-than-large McDonald's projects to Willie.
What's this?
It's your large Coca-Cola from Mickey D's.
All of this?
I got myself a super summer-sized Coke and a milkshake and a mega-sized order of fries. They're all larger-than-large for a limited time only.
Are you saying all of this is for you?
Hey, man, if you don't understand what I'm saying, we're both in trouble.
Super summer sizes.
Only at McDonald's.
Supersize me, and the whole country got supersized. It's been pretty rough on the PR front, pink slime and antibiotics and all the rest. It's also difficult just on the systems front, as I read here, Jason. I mean, McDonald's became famous for delivering very inexpensive food that was tasty very quickly. How's all the change in the menu worked into that system?
Well, I think they added some items that were just more complicated to make. You know, the wraps, for example, are more complicated to put together than your typical quarter pounder. And we're talking about, you know, seconds here in some cases. But given that, for example, their desired drive-through average time for a customer is 90 seconds, seconds really count. And so when you start adding these more complicated menu items, the McCafe drinks and such, with this roughly the same number of staff or a similar number of staff, that adds time. That slows down the process, and that's speed is obviously one of their core value propositions.
And people are piling in here online with responses to this. Brenda says to us, I think many Americans are looking for slow food, even when they're in a hurry. Angie says, I'm a truck driver, and McDonald's problems don't surprise me in the least. They've lost their way completely. Allison just says, no, gross. And Jeffrey writes to us on Facebook here, what is the secret ingredient in hugely popular Five Guys burgers, one of their competitors? The same stuff that was in the original McDonald's. Hot, juicy hamburger, cooked while you're there, delivered with melted cheese. The recipe's no secret. Someone should tell Ronald. Does he have Alzheimer's? Ed says good burgers ain't science fiction food. Did they just fall off of the original? You know, Americans still eat burgers in pretty big numbers, but they're eating other people's burgers now.
Well, I think, you know, those comments encapsulate really well kind of the paradoxical challenge that McDonald's faces. On the one hand, there's a lot of people saying they just need to get back to basics. And there's clearly evidence that they're being challenged by these smaller kind of boutique burger chains. On the other hand, part of the reason those guys are growing so quickly is that they're much smaller than McDonald's. McDonald's is also being challenged by Chipotle, clearly, which they once owned a large stake in, ironically. And, that argues for, in some people's minds, you need to branch out a bit more. You need to offer healthier fare, not just burgers. Even if they're gourmet burgers, they're still going to be, you know, high in calories and fat and so forth. You need to offer something to the customers who are more attracted to those options. And that's part of what they're wrestling with right now is that paradox.
You've got some analysts who are willing to go all the way. Here in the Salon.com, death of a fast food Goliath, what the decline of McDonald's really means. Is it possible that they're just so out of step with the times that this giant superstructure, 35,000 restaurants, what, 14,000 in the U.S., the rest abroad, can they make the turn? Or does it just, I don't know, devolve, go away?
It's an absolutely fascinating question to watch going forward, and I don't pretend to know the answer. I mean, I think predictions of death are rather premature at this point. You know, the problem they're having is slow, and in the last year in particular, declining growth. But this is a company that is still huge. It's still very profitable. It had a net profit margin of about 17% last year in what was a pretty bad year. That's lower than the 20%+ that they had in previous years, but you know, it's still pretty respectable. So they're far from dead yet.
Yeah.
But they have a lot of work cut out for them in deciding which way to take this and then persuading their customers to give them a second chance, at least the customers who've grown disaffected.
And of course, it matters in a way because so many people eat there. It goes to economics, it goes to health. Jason Dean with the Wall Street Journal, please stand by in Chicago. They're near McDonald's headquarters. With us now from St. Paul, Minnesota, is Jonathan Mays, senior financial editor for Nation's Restaurant News. It's the biggest trade publication in the restaurant world. Jonathan Mays, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
So I'm looking here at all these lists of the woes of McDonald's. Customers confused by nearly 200 choices on the menu now. You try to give people choice and then they're confused. Customers suspicious of the ingredients and preservatives in the food. Customers enraged. I'm reading here, this is from a Reuters piece, it looks like, enraged by the way they appear to treat their workers. You look behind the counter and people don't look happy. Can McDonald's make this turn, make the next evolutionary step here, Jonathan?
Of course they can. Keep in mind, McDonald's is the largest restaurant chain in the world, as you've mentioned. Mm-hmm. It has the most recognizable brand in the world, restaurant brand in the world. It has the best locations. It still has a ton of smart people who work in Chicago or who work in Oak Brook, and it has a massive, massive marketing budget, as they've shown during the Super Bowl, and it's so far been effective. So, yeah, of course they can make their turn.
Except they're built on what they call the system, right? The can churn out that was originally put together all the way back in San Bernardino in California. Ray Kroc founded more or less the early version of it and said, wow, this is so efficient. Can you make the kind of... Is fancier food the right word for it, Jonathan? More green, more salad, more labor-intensive food in the McDonald's system and still have it all work?
Well, that really is a very, very big question for them going forward. In fact, it's a $35 billion question if you think about it. And really there's this – I mean, there's two schools of thought here. There is the direction that McDonald's appears to be going is with this plan called Create Your Taste. And that's a platform in which you could go into McDonald's, you can customize a burger, you can customize a chicken sandwich, you can get sweet potato fries, and it's supposed to – and it is targeted at, you know, the customers who they theoretically are losing to Chipotle and to Shake Shack and to Five Guys, as mentioned.
Yep.
But there's another school of thought out there that believes that McDonald's needs to go back to the roots, which is serving cheap food fast, cheap good food fast. And if you talk to franchisees and a number of analysts, a lot of people think that they should just cut dramatically from the menu, market more, you know, market Big Macs and Quarter Pounders a lot more, and focus on that speed and on that value and a little bit of innovation. And they really worry that the customization platform or any other efforts to add, more complicated menu items will only make things worse, especially from the service time front.
Back to basics, maybe, but then do people want those basics anymore from McDonald's? Jonathan Mays in St. Paul, please stand by. Jason Dean with the Wall Street Journal in Chicago. The sound of McDonald's was working pretty well just in 2004.
I'm loving it. My car's way too clean. If only I could start this fine piece of machine. I'm loving it. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
McDonald's.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
And now, well, they want you loving it again. We're talking about Mighty McDonald's, biggest restaurant chain in the world, and its troubles. Do you still go? Is it still on your menu, off your menu? I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Mighty McDonald's, biggest restaurant chain in the world, in trouble as tastes and times change, and how it's trying to engineer a comeback, the challenges and what that would take. Here's the classic McDonald's jingle, the recipe for that famous Big Mac.
To all beef patties, special sauce, lettuce, cheese, pickles, onions, and sesame seeds.
It was American bedrock, pop culture, fast food for a very long time. Numbers up and up, even in the first decade of this century. But the last couple of years, trouble, and we wonder how deep that goes. Let's get our callers in here, if we may. Jonathan, Jason, Matt in Sparta, Wisconsin. Matt, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
So I think that the decline in McDonald's profitability is reflective of fast food in general, and I think it's due to a couple of reasons. One, the documentaries in the last decade or so are exposing the conditions at factory farms and CAFOs. I think that got people's attention, as well as the headlines that the obesity epidemic typically gets on a regular basis. I think people are looking for, just healthier choices, more balanced diet. Ironically, in the rare occasion I do get fast food, it is McDonald's, because it gets less expensive than most other chains. They're faster than most other chains, and they're consistent. So it's not very frequently, but that is where I go.
So when you do go for it, that's where you go. Jonathan Mays, what about this? Here we come back to the idea of their sort of become the brand epitome of a kind of food industry that people have become leery of. They don't want factory farmed meat and all the rest. Morgan Spurlock, Super Size Me, turned a lot of people off back, a decade ago now. Has McDonald's shaken off that kind of reputation as exhibit A of ag industry that people don't want to support?
No, they haven't. That reputation was with them for the past decade, actually longer than the past decade, and yet its sales grew every year.
Mm-hmm.
McDonald's always has this – people have like this love-hate relationship with McDonald's. If you take a look at every single – rating of restaurant chains and of food, McDonald's almost always comes in last. If you take a look at the burger ratings at other ratings, they always come in dead last. And yet their sales they have a massive percentage of the U.S. market. Their sales had grown really up until the last 2 years. So And, you know, at this point, they're really, you know, if you look at who they're losing their business to, they're just losing their business mostly to other burger chains and quick service restaurants.
Okay. Of course, there's the whole thing of fast casual, a little bit nicer, a little bit more expensive. 29er writes to us here, the big problem with Mickey D's are the fast casual restaurants like Chipotle, Panera, et cetera, where you can get a pretty decent lunch for about $7.50, says our listener, which is not that much more than a Big Mac, fries, and a drink for about $6. For the extra $1.50, he writes, I'm getting the burrito. Jason Dean, is that part of what McDonald's is up against here? And could they raise their prices and compete with the Chipotles and Paneras, or that's just not where they can go?
I don't think they can do that without changing their menu because, you know, they're not offering, at this point, similar fare. Perhaps with the customization, they'll be able to do that. But I think, you know, again, this kind of points up the multifaceted challenge. They're under pressure from more robust direct competitors in Burger King and Wendy's.
Why are those more robust, Jason? What's more robust about them?
I think they've, you know, they've improved after struggling for a long time. They both made some improvements. Burger King now is run by the 3G, the big Brazilian U.S. PE company, and with backing from Warren Buffett.
PE, private equity there, yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And they're very aggressive. They've been very aggressive, particularly on the financial side. So I think they're, you know, they're under pressure from their longtime competitors. They're under pressure from these new rising competitors in the fast casual area. And again, they've got to make a choice about kind of which way they want to focus. And as you said, I think they are kind of the embodiment of a lot of. I mean, Don Thompson wasn't wrong in the quote that you played earlier. They are huge, and they become the embodiment, the target for a lot of what people generally feel is wrong about, be it fast food, industrialized food, just the food establishment in the U.S. in general.
Jonathan Mays, a lot of people eat there because you could argue they have to, because you can get something at McDonald's for pretty darn cheap. Do they have to stick with the low – do they have to be the low-cost food place to win?
At this point, it's difficult to see how they can do anything but that. They've really, if you look historically, McDonald's has always had a problem selling premium products. And if you just go back to 2013, and what was, you know, pretty much the biggest failure under Don Thompson's leadership was the Mighty Wings, offering.
Yep.
Right, and they were, and that was basically a premium product. They were selling large chicken wings, three wings for a dollar. They were large wings. People actually liked them, but they just didn't order them. And that's just not really what consumers expect from McDonald's. Their average check is about like $5. People go in because they want to get something fast, and they don't want to spend a lot of money. And 3/4 of their customers don't even get out of their car. They go through the drive-thru.
Yeah. Here's the outgoing CEO defending McDonald's efforts last fall on CBS.
No one has done more to make changes relative to adding milk, fruits. We've tried vegetables. No one has done more in that arena than McDonald's. No one has done more.
Nobody's done more, but some things stick, some things don't. And what do customers really want? Wes in Nashville, Tennessee. Wes, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom. I think McDonald's main issue is that they've kind of lost their way. They're kind of in a branding crisis. Playgrounds have been replaced by coffee bars. And when I go to McDonald's, you know, there's a local McDonald's that's close to me, but they've remodeled and gotten rid of the playground. So actually, I drive 5 more miles to take the kids for a lunch, you know, every couple weeks to play in the playground. So,
It's very interesting, Wes. I'm glad you raised that. I mean, Jason, I'm reading here in some of these reports, customers attending McDonald's and saying, I don't know what McDonald's is exactly anymore. I used to understand exactly what it was, and now they've tried this and tried that, and I'm not sure what McDonald's is. You hear Wes's complaint there. He doesn't want the fancy coffee. He wants the playground and the burger.
Yeah, I think, you know, we get back to the problem of their just sheer size. It became much more difficult to grow by opening new outlets. And so what's your alternative if you're going to continue to grow in the U.S.? They chose to add more menu items and branch out into areas like specialty coffee and to try things like wraps and salads, healthier or seemingly healthier offerings. And that, you know, brought some new revenue, but it also, you know, arguably took their focus, took their eye off the ball, and alienated some customers, whether it's because of they changed playgrounds or because they became slower. You know, and so you get this call from some people to go back to basics.
You know, Jonathan, there was a long time where somewhere in this country a McDonald's was opening basically every day. I think the average was 360 new ones a year for years and years and years. Lately, McDonald's has been selling more of them to the franchisees. They want them to actually own them. But I'm reading here a recent survey where the franchisees don't like all these changes, saying operator morale, lowest I've seen it in 20 years. They don't want the McCafe stuff. They say we're going in so many directions it makes my head spin. Customers are leaving us because even they can't figure out what we're trying to be anymore. That's from the people operating the restaurants, Jonathan.
That's really a result of the performance of the past couple of years. And it's a real challenge for them going forward. If franchisees are disgruntled, it's going to be a lot more difficult for McDonald's to get them to make investments in their restaurants, to get them to go along with company plans for Create Your Taste and for whatever other plan they have. It's a very significant issue, and it really does boil down to the company's sales. If the company's sales go down and a lot of customers are ordering low-cost items, which is what McDonald's is doing, the franchisees are going to make less money and they're going to be upset.
Here's a listener on the web says, I eat McDonald's five times a week in my 20s. Now I'm a dad. We've taught our kids that McDonald's uses music and bright colors and clowns to try and trick kids into bad food. We never eat there. That's a kind of cultural turn away. Jim in Omaha, Nebraska. Jim, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I love a great cheeseburger. It's one of my favorite foods.
Hard to resist.
And in Omaha, you know, one of the meat capitals of the world.
Yeah.
There's a lot of locally owned restaurants that serve great burgers. And I was wondering if you could comment on the competition which McDonald's is getting from the locally owned restaurants.
Well, Jonathan, I'll bring that to you. I mean, there are chains that we know nationally, Five Guys, but there are tons of little burger joints that seem to be popping up all over the place, not necessarily chains at all, Jonathan. Has that nibbled or chomped into McDonald's sales?
The evidence, I haven't really seen a whole lot of evidence that these better burger places or some of these good local burger places are taking a lot of business away from McDonald's. What they might be doing is sort of putting a cap in terms of what McDonald's can do. And it goes back to this idea that McDonald's hasn't really been able to offer a premium product. If you go back to 2013 again, and one of the products they dropped was this Angus Third Pound burger line, and it was a pretty good burger, but they just couldn't sell it. Consumers, if they want a good burger, if I want a good burger, I'm really not going to go to McDonald's. That's not my first choice. I want to go to Five Guys. I want to go in Minneapolis and St. Paul here. We have a bunch of really good local places. And if I'm in New York, I'm going to go to Shake Shack. If I'm in California, I'm going to go to In-N-Out. So it does sort of put a cap on what they can do. It's a real challenge for them.
You get wage stagnation. It's hard to move a whole lot of Americans up that chain to spend more for that burger. Of course, McDonald's part of that. They've been picketed all over the place in recent months for not paying their own staff more. Jonathan Mays, Jason Dean, please stand by in St. Paul and Chicago there. With us now from Fairfield, Connecticut, is Daniel Gross. He's a columnist for Slate and the Daily Beast, executive editor of the Business Quarterly Strategy and Business. Daniel Gross, thank you very much for being with us.
Great to be here.
How do you see the problem with McDonald's? Is this just a little slump? It'll turn around again, roar again, be the big giant, all muscled up, or something else?
Well, let me just say, I think the conversation has left out a big part of what makes McDonald's McDonald's, and that is that, you know, all these struggles that my colleagues here have been talking about are generally tied to what's going on domestically in the U.S., where you know, they've long since saturated the market, and they have this competition from the upscale burger joints. They're having difficulty on the wage front, the culture front, the zeitgeist front, the nutrition front.
Yeah.
McDonald's, like so many other iconic American companies, is really increasingly a global company where a rump of the sales are in America. So McDonald's is in 119 countries. The U.S. accounts for 30% of its sales. That's a lot. That's substantial. But it's nowhere near a majority. And, of course, the same holds for Coke, IBM, Microsoft, et cetera. And so when you talk about these companies that have been around for a while, that have been iconic for so long, that are struggling in this, you know, vast and vital home market of the U.S.,
yeah,
that is really only part of the story, because the real action and the real growth is happening overseas. And I don't think we should – this is not to say that they don't have challenges in the U.S., but I don't think we should be discounting this. I was in Israel in December, and there are McDonald's everywhere where there weren't 5 or 10 years ago, you know, at gas stations, on Masada. You know, Masada was that fortress in the desert that the Romans were trying for years. You know, the Roman Empire couldn't conquer Masada, but the Golden Arches is there in the food court and very busy. And a another component about the overseas business is that, again, we heard our colleagues here talking about how McDonald's problem at home is that it's, it's cheap food. People go there because they can't afford to go anywhere else, and it's fuel, and they can't get a premium product. In all these overseas markets, McDonald's is not the cheapest food available. And in fact, in many places, it's actually more expensive than the, local street food or the local cuisine. It's a treat. It's aspirational. Mm-hmm. It is somewhat more upscale. And we see this, of course, with other U.S. fast food brands like KFC and Taco Bell, et cetera. So while we should, talk about what's going on in the U.S. and all these issues that are very evident and appear to have cost the CEO his job, there's another big story, and I think a lot of the focus at headquarters is on this overseas business, where McDonald's is a different type of proposition.
But,
in places, in many of these markets, they're not concerned about calorie counts, minimum wage, things like that.
Just serve it up hot. But Jason Dean, I'm looking, though, at their overall revenues here, and they still have the problem. I mean, it's quite true, as Daniel says, 36,000 restaurants, only 14,000 of those in the USA. Still, it's a company-wide problem at this point, Jason, even with all the overseas business, isn't it?
Yeah, I think Daniel certainly raises a good point about the importance of the international markets. In the past year, kind of everything, or very near it, went south. I think the reason there's much more angst, it would seem, in headquarters about the U.S. problems is because, the problems here seem a bit less easy to solve. In China, one of the most important markets for the fast food industry generally, and a big growth market for McDonald's in the past, they took a big hit because of a food safety scare involving a supplier. I think there's a sense that that will work its way through, although they also face increasing local competition in places like China as well. And so it's, the outlook there is not unambiguously rosy, certainly, going forward, even if they get past that scare. So they face challenges overseas as well.
Of course, the guy who's in line to succeed, Mr. Thompson here, has just sort of made his name abroad in the UK, in Europe. Does he have a magic formula, Jason, to turn things around for McDonald's?
I wouldn't bet that he has a magic formula, but I think he's, he's certainly cut from a different mold than previous McDonald's CEOs. He's only the second ever to be foreign-born, and the first one was not CEO for very long. He's spent most of his career
British,
in Europe.
He's British, right?
Correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he spent most of his career in Europe, and he had some success in turning around the franchise, the chain in the UK when he was running operations there.
Jason Dean with The Wall Street Journal, please stand by in Chicago. Jonathan Mays in St. Paul. Daniel Gross with Slate and The Daily Beast in Fairfield, Connecticut. We're talking about Mighty McDonald's in trouble as tastes and times change. At least right now, you can join us. Is Mickey D's still your go-to for that dirt-cheap double cheeseburger? Have you moved on to healthier fare or just to different, hipper burgers and fries? How would you fix McDonald's? I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Imagine having a personal library with over 150,000 titles. Fiction, nonfiction, bestsellers, every category imaginable. Now imagine having a personal assistant read them to you in your car, on the train, wherever you want. That's what it's like to have Audible.com. On Point listeners get a free audiobook of your choice and a free 30-day trial. Just go to audible.com/onpoint. Download a free title and listen. It's that easy. Go to audible.com/onpoint. That's audible.com/onpoint. Get started today.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about McDonald's. Its sales have been in trouble. It's the kind of icon of fast food in America, part of American popular culture for a long, long time. Had a good run even in the first decade of this century, but it has been up against changing times and changing tastes lately. Trying to engineer a comeback, CEO on his way out, new guy headed in. What to do and what should it do? Jason Dean with us from the Wall Street Journal, Jonathan Mays from Nation's Restaurant News, Daniel Gross from Slate and the Daily Beast. Here from back in the 80s, Welcome to McDonald's, aired as a spot on TV. Longer version appeared in an orientation video welcoming new employees.
Tonight, we'll serve it up with a smile.
Order
tonight,
a pounder with cheese.
That light's a welcoming sign. I like shake, please, we've got your
favorite. I don't know if that was ever for real, but the workers at McDonald's lately don't look that jolly to me. Marlene in New York. Jay in New York. Marlene, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
My comment was that perhaps McDonald's should stick with their original menu of burgers and fries and do what Henry Ford did, pay their workers more than anyone else in the fast food area. That way you end up with happy workers, less turnover, and happy workers mean happy customers.
Of course, they might go off and eat somewhere else with the extra cash, but let us pick it up. Marlene, Jonathan Mays, how about it? Bump those wages up at McDonald's. Maybe you'll get a happier staff and a happier experience.
Yeah. A number of restaurant chains have actually done that. Pretty famously, out in California, In-N-Out has paid its workers higher wages, and it has a very happy, engaged workforce, and that's certainly an argument. The challenge, again, for McDonald's goes back to that cheap food thing, and if it were to do that, it would certainly have to raise prices. And if your competitors aren't doing the same in the current environment where wage growth is pretty stagnant, a lot of those customers could very well go to Burger King or Wendy's or some other chain. That would be very, very difficult for them to do.
Daniel Gross, here's a listener on Twitter. Rajesh says there's no way out for them. Chipotle, Shake Shack cater to middle income plus. Mickey D's is stuck thanks to exploitive strategy. Daniel?
Well, first of all, that Tonight ad, I think, wasn't that a number from West Side Story?
Yeah, it sounded like it, didn't it? Song and dance. Everybody's
we're
so
we're going to rock it tonight.
Yeah, we're rocking.
I don't know that exploitative is the word I would use. McDonald's, and again, it's really actually an extraordinary kind of historical achievement, right? What started as a single burger stand in the 1950s, and of course, all around the country, there were single burger stands that did shakes and fries. This global business that industrialized fast food in the same way, you know, Ray Kroc did to fast food what Henry Ford did to the Model T. He made it a vertically integrated business. He industrialized it. He imposed uniformity, right? So you go around the world, the Big Mac is going to have many basically similar ingredients, same taste. That is a pretty remarkable achievement. What they've had to do in order to do that and maintain it is set up a system of food production and distribution, which, you know, involves industrial farming, freezing things, using chemicals and preservatives. I mean, that's how you get that, in the same way that people making other types of products use other types of additives to make sure that they get a uniform look and feel. It has meant treating labor as this sort of input and then doing everything possible to keep the price of that input down. And, you know, that worked for McDonald's in the 70s, 80s, 90s, and even into this last decade. And I think what's happened is the culture, our culture changes actually quite rapidly, and we have this kind of rampant, foodism. We have a greater focus on, organic foods, natural foods, what's in our food, how it's prepared, how it's farmed. There's a greater sense of transparency. And all that kind of works against those who are producing food on an industrial basis. And to a degree, McDonald's is a kind of poster, you know, as the most successful one to have done that, it is sort of the poster child, which is why the documentary gets made about it, which is why when fast food workers strike for higher wages, they're focusing on McDonald's. So, you know, it does make it, it has exemplified these trends that it created, which was to the great benefit of its shareholders and its franchisees and its owners. And now it's, you know, it's on the, it's what the market gave it. Is now taking away.
Of course, 70% net profit, still not too bad, but on the slide. Joe in Marfa, Texas. Joe, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Say, I think it's pretty obvious. KFC doesn't sell hamburgers. Starbucks doesn't sell hamburgers. Whole Foods doesn't sell hamburgers. I don't go to McDonald's when I go to have a salad, to purposely go there to buy a salad. You can buy better ingredients now than you used to be able to buy, and you still know it's junk food.
So what does that all tell you, Joe? What should they do?
What they should do is to try not to be what everybody else is. They're trying to be in a chicken business. They're trying to be,
yeah,
you know, go back to a better quality of hamburger for the price, and I'd go back. You know, I don't know about you, but when I go to McDonald's and have a Big Mac, I love it, and then I know that later on in the day, I'm going to feel sick to my stomach.
Great.
And because of everything they put in. Now, if they just stop that or maybe get a higher grade of meat, and
yeah,
it's so confusing when you go there and see all these options. And, you know, sometimes on a truck stop, and I see all the truckers, and they're looking at all this, and it takes 10 times as long.
Right, right. The line can't move.
That's
everybody's confused.
It's not the turnover rate. It's you can't figure out what you want to buy.
Joe, I'm glad for your call. Jonathan Mays, could they do that? Could McDonald's just somehow go back, not use the chemicals, you know, just make a really nice burger and be competitive? Or that's not open to them, Jonathan?
You know, I think they could get, I mean, I think it goes back to the sentiment of going back to the basics, where, you know, remembering who they are and, you know, what they've historically stood for, which is, you know, serving, you know, a decent quality burger for a low price and doing it very fast.
But maybe that's not good enough anymore. I mean, you said their 1,000-pound Angus burger was pretty good, and it's gone.
Right, but it gets back to that cheap food. That's what people expect out of McDonald's. They spent years and years and years training their customers that they were the low-cost option, and that's what their customers want. And the other issue, if you go back to third quarter of 2014, mm-hmm, McDonald's underperformed its direct competitors, Wendy's, Burger King, and Steak and Shake and Sonic and,
yep,
companies like that. They underperformed them by 620 basis points. If there was this broad movement away from industrialized food, you would see it a lot more broad-based. People still really want, I think, what the type of food McDonald's serves. They're just not getting it from McDonald's. They're getting it from other concepts.
Bill in Greenwich, Connecticut. Bill, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I'm just, you know, our family has been traveling quite a bit, and when we stop for something to eat, we'll go to a fast food restaurant.
Okay.
McDonald's always was first on the list, and yet now my daughters are vegetarians, and McDonald's doesn't have the veggie burger that can attract our family to McDonald's. And so, therefore, not only my daughters don't go, but the whole family doesn't stop there any longer.
Bill, how old are your daughters, if I may ask?
They're college age.
Okay.
And one of my daughters tells me that 15% of the students at her school are vegetarian. And it seems like that would be a part of the market that McDonald's is missing. I work for a non-for-profit, and we serve hamburgers during our festivals. And quite a bit few people will request vegetarian burgers. So it seems as though it'd be something at least worth a try.
Yeah, and maybe a generational challenge for them if they don't offer something there. Jonathan, how about it? With everything, 200 items on the menu, it's not big enough for a veggie burger?
You'd think with that many items, one of them would have to be vegetarian friendly. You'd think of it. But I go back to the idea of what McDonald's is and what it stands for. And I would personally have my doubts as to whether people who are vegetarians are that concerned about their food would really be that interested in McDonald's. historically, you don't if a chain such as McDonald's was to offer healthy food, people really don't order it. They still order the less than healthy type stuff.
And, yeah, of course they're losing Bill's whole family though, as the younger generation says no thanks to the beef patty.
Yeah, and you know that's sort of. You know, that's a risk, but you know, they can't really be everything to everybody.
Yeah,
and true. I think that's one of the challenges for them right now is that they're trying to be everything to everybody, and that's a very, very difficult thing for them to do.
Danny in Austin, Texas. Danny, you're on.
Hi, Tom. I got a bit of food for thought. I think we kind of touched around this issue at least.
Okay.
And I think so. McDonald's is obviously losing a generation, but that's because they didn't cultivate that generation when it was most susceptible. They retired their most powerful weapon, which was marketing to children. You know, I don't think kids want to have their birthday parties at McDonald's like they did in the 80s. There's no more Fry Guys, and you know, you don't see Ronald McDonald anymore. And I don't think families on road trips are getting nagged to pull over at the first sign of a Golden Arches.
Right. Of course, anyway, they still got happy. Danny, I appreciate your call. They still got Happy Meals in there. Daniel Gross, they took a lot of flack for, you know, selling the McDonald's food via the Happy Meal and the clown and all the rest for a while.
Right.
Danny says they may have made a mistake if they backed off that.
Bring back Grimace. Remember Grimace?
No, I do not. What was that?
He was a big – there was the Hamburglar, who was the guy who would steal your burger, and there was Grimace, who was the sort of big, dumb, purple creature type of thing. Kind of like a Barney type of character. But, yes, it was much more oriented towards kids. We said that, you know, the previous caller from I think he said he was from Greenwich, Connecticut. Well, if McDonald's has lost Greenwich, Connecticut, then you know they're in big trouble. But
wow,
what it does show,
like,
I think there is an element of a kind of class story going on here,
mm-hmm.
which is that I don't think McDonald's was ever upscale, but it was firmly middle class in the Midwestern town where it was a college town where I grew up. A lot of people's first jobs after school and high school were at McDonald's. That was a perfectly cool thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
That's where when we left school to go for lunch, that's where you would go. It was adjacent to a university. University students would go there. And I think what's happened over the years as more parts of America become more upscale and then food becomes a part of that, fewer people probably want their teenage kids working at McDonald's after school. They want them working on, you know, science projects and things that will help them get into college. And they're not being, they have many more options. In the town where I live in Connecticut, again, kids will go to the diner. They'll go to the pizza place. They'll go to Chipotle. They'll go to Qdoba. There are lots of options, but there is no – if you walk into the McDonald's, you won't see a bunch of teenagers hanging out there.
Jason Dean, how about it? Is there a problem here with the thinning, the falling of the middle class for McDonald's somehow? That really puts hyper pressure for it to keep its prices down, and it can't sort of play in the middle ground because it's just not there the way it was.
I think you can see that arguably in what we've been talking about. You've got these higher end chains that are doing very well. And people who, you know, might have gone to McDonald's before, not because they had premium options, but potentially because they wanted a burger and those other guys weren't around.
But now you've got Shake Shack. You can go in there and drop some serious money for quite a simple burger meal.
Right. So they get peeled off. And then you have the value-oriented consumers. And times are tough for those folks. The economy, the economic recovery has not favored them. So I think there is an element of that. And I think, you know, it circles back in this wage debate, which is both a potential issue for McDonald's in terms of costs, i.e. the pressure to raise those could potentially raise their costs and cause them to raise prices. It's also an image issue for them at this time when there's increasing angst and concern about the plight of the lower middle class and less well-off people that right. McDonald's is being pinpointed for that.
Jonathan?
If I could interrupt, it's not just a sort of image issue. We've seen a lot of states, you know, the federal minimum wage is $7.25, but there are all these ballot initiatives and state laws that have boosted local and minimum wages in many states to $8, $9,
mm-hmm.
$10 and
yep.
put them on automatic, inflation indexes so they go up year over year. So that's impacting, that's a reality for them.
Hey, Jonathan,
for many of them.
So it matters to our wages. It matters to our health or many people's health. It matters to the company, obviously. What do you think a McDonald's shaped to thrive in this century would look like? Jonathan?
To thrive in this century, I still again go back to really a company that is just focused on the fundamentals of what it's been, and
so not changing. But go back and be Ray Kroc's fast cheap burger again.
Right. That's yeah. I think that has been its historic place in the market, and that's really what it probably needs to focus on. Because they're not really going to get the premium customer. I mean, historically they've really struggled to do that. And look, if the minimum wage, if wages go up, I think from their standpoint, you're more likely to see it. You're more likely to get McDonald's employees to get a raise if the minimum wage is to go up in some form or fashion. So it's a level playing field, because I really doubt they'll do it on without that sort of incentive. So it really gets back to, just focusing on the basics, remembering who they are, remembering who their customer historically been, which has been families, and just making sure that they're just, hitting those things first.
A giant in a changing world, and we'll see how it comes out of this latest slump, what it looks like on the other side. Interesting for Americans' waistlines, wallets, communities, economies. Jonathan Mays at Nation's Restaurant News in St. Paul. Thank you very much for joining us today, Jonathan.
Thank you for having me.
Daniel Gross at Slate and the Daily Beast. Daniel, thanks for being here.
Happy to be here.
And Jason Dean at the Wall Street Journal in Chicago, McDonald's territory. Jason, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Tom. I enjoyed it.
On Point is produced by Nick Anderson, Catherine Brewer, Abigail Collins, Julie Jopp, Sam Gelrosen, Eileen Amada, Stefano Katsonis, Sarah Platt, and James Ross. With help from Araz Havan and Caitlin O'Keefe, our executive producer is Karen Schiffman. I'm Tom Ashbrook. Thanks for joining us. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.